Hi, this is Robert Middleton of Action Plan Marketing, and you're listening to an expert interview for the Action Plan Marketing Club. And today I'm interviewing Daphne Gray Grant. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Daphne grew up in the newspaper business. Her family owned a weekly newspaper in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and she worked there from the age of 16, writing stories, editing, dealing with newspaper carriers, and even selling the odd advertisement. After leaving the family business, she became books editor at the Daily Vancouver Sun newspaper and then moved up to the role of features editor, a job she held for 6 years, running a large department and being responsible mainly for the daily pages. From there, she was recruited to the corporate side, becoming the first ever director of communications for the paper's parent company. On the birth of her triplet children, yes, triplets, Daphne briefly left paid employment, but returned a year later, in 1995, to launch her own business as a communications consultant. In addition to helping companies write and produce newsletters, brochures, and websites, and manage both internal and external communications, she also coaches corporate writers and copywriters in how to write faster and better. Daphne is the author of the book, 8.5 Steps to Writing Faster Better, which we'll be talking about later, and she's also the publisher of the popular email newsletter, Power Writing, that goes out every Tuesday, just like mine, and goes to subscribers around the world. We'll be speaking about both the newsletter and the book later in the interview. So welcome to the interview, Daphne. I'm really excited to have you on this call.
Hi, Robert. I'm happy to be here.
We know that writing is an issue for a lot of independent professionals. So the first question I have for you is, how important do you think it is for people who are self-employed or self-employed professionals, or independent professionals as I often call them, to be able to write? How important is it?
Well, I think it's one of the most important things you need to be able to do. If you think about yourself being a shopper and walking into a store, you walk in and you form an immediate impression of what that store is like and whether or not you want to buy there. There's a whole bunch of issues that you will quickly, often without thought, calculate. What are the decorations in the store? What is it that they're actually selling? How quickly are you helped? What's the lighting like? You know, there's a big long list of things that in a few seconds that you rapidly calculate through to decide whether or not you are willing to shop in the store.
And some of that's kind of unconscious.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, some of it, with me, a marketing guy, it's a little more conscious. I'm always looking at that stuff. But it's affecting you nevertheless. Okay.
Yeah. And for someone who is trying to connect with people, not through a physical store, but via the internet, then writing takes the place of that. And what you send out in your writing has to grab people on a bunch of different levels. The beginning of the article or the newsletter or whatever it is you're sending out has to be interesting enough for people to commit to read the entire thing. And as they get drawn through the article, they need to be educated, they need to be interested, they need to be intrigued. And to be able to accomplish all of those things, you need solid writing skills in your arsenal.
And that goes for web copy as well, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's the place people go first, and often they read the web copy, and people say are proud to have a website, but often the copy is poorly written, not structured very well, and that just turns people off.
Absolutely. You know, The interesting thing to me is how few people really understand much about writing these days. And I think there's been a fairly dramatic change in the last, say, 10 years. You know, I look at my own kids who are 14 now, and, you know, I work with them on their writing quite a bit. And
more than the school does, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I'm very, very aware of is how low the school expectations are surrounding writing. When I compare it to what I experienced when I went through school, the expectations related to math and science are much higher than they used to be. But in terms of writing, it really is pretty low. And I think that's really, really sad, because when people start their own businesses, and when they either try to launch a newsletter, try to launch a website, they really don't have the skill and the training to be able to write in the way that's necessary.
You know, I hear this all the time. People say, well, I don't know what to write about. I don't know where to start. I don't think my writing is very good, and they don't have a lot of confidence about it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's just not well taught in school. And I don't really understand why that's the case, but it's a big gap out there right now.
So, but you're quite different than that, and I'm somewhat different as well. I think I kind of taught myself to write. I had a pretty good education in writing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I know it is difficult. But tell me how you learned to write. How did you get to be a good writer? It sounds like you started early in the newspaper business. And a lot of people say, well, I didn't have that background, But tell me about your background in it.
Well, I have to tell you that I learned the slow way. I survived my family's newspaper business without really learning to write. And I even survived, I would say I survived the sun without really learning to write as well. So I spent 6 years at a daily...
Are you telling me that journalists don't know how to write in many cases?
Let me see. Well, how am I going to answer that question?
Diplomatically?
as diplomatically as possible. I think there's some people who don't know how to write and still manage to survive in the newspaper business.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues is that with daily newspapers, you have an expectation left on you that you have to produce in a certain way. And if you are able to do whatever it takes to meet those production requirements, then no one is going to talk to you about how you write. And,
it's more a quantity than quality.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, I have to say, I worked with some very, very skilled writers, but I worked with a number of people who didn't know much about writing and weren't particularly good at it.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So once I got through the daily newspaper and then took some time off to have my children and then decided to go back to work as someone who was self-employed, that was when I really became determined to learn how to write and learn how to write quickly. Because the thing is, if you work in a newspaper, you're paid no matter what you produce. And if you're working as a freelance writer, you're only paid when you produce. And so there's a pretty strong motivation there to learn how to write quickly and more easily.
So not only are we going to learn some of the tips and tricks and strategies of writing, it's how to write, as you say, better and faster.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
It's not just one or the other. It has to be both.
So you realized that you had to learn how. So what did you do? How did you teach yourself? What are the things that you did?
Well, the first thing I did was I went to the library, and this was over several years, and got every single book about writing out that I could find. And I scanned through all these books, made notes, looked at every trick I could develop, and fairly quickly saw that the time involved in writing was greatly reduced just by harnessing these tricks and using them in my own writing.
Okay, good. And we'll be getting into some of those later, right?
Right, absolutely.
You know, I did a lot of that as well. I read several books on writing. One of my favorite ones was the one by Stephen King on writing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that book, yes.
You know, I've never been a Stephen King fan, but I really enjoyed that book.
Yes.
And then I really studied The Elements of Style by Strunk and White, just so I knew where to make sure to put my commas and semicolons and all of those things.
Which... Yes, and S apostrophe S. You mustn't forget that.
Oh, yeah, well, I always knew that, but people make that mistake anyway.
Yeah.
So, there's little things like that, but I also am a very fast writer. Sometimes I can write longhand without stopping for 20, 30 minutes, and
mm-hmm.
pow, I've got it, or typing.
Right.
So I produce a weekly newsletter, so do you.
Yeah.
So what's the purpose of that? So that's a good example of your writing that you do on a regular basis.
Yes, yes. Well, the the purpose of that is really to reach out to people and to create a sort of mechanism that gives me a way of connecting with people every week. And, you know, I belong to a number of different internet groups, and there aren't very many people, Robert. You and I may be the only ones I know who produce a newsletter each week. There are lots of people who do it every 2 weeks, a bunch of people who do it
once a month,
but there aren't very many people who are prepared to make the commitment to do it weekly.
So how long does it take you to write it?
Well, it really varies. Sometimes the idea pops into my head and I sit down and write. I can do it in about half an hour. Other times it will take me closer to an hour to do. But, you know, some years ago, if I was doing something of this length, it would have taken me 3 or 4 hours to do. So.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find it takes me about 45 minutes to write and then a little bit of time to edit.
Right.
And then I have to go through the steps of posting it on the internet, et cetera. So the whole process I can usually do in under 2 hours.
Right.
But so I think, well, anybody could write a newsletter easy, and after all, it only takes a couple hours. But people think, well, it takes me 2 days to write an e-zine, and so they just get discouraged about it.
Yes.
And writing an email newsletter and other things like good copy for your website and articles and other things, if it takes a really long time, you just shy away from it.
Yes.
And it can really undermine your business.
Absolutely.
I just hear stories over and over again of how people, you know, when they finally got down to it and got their sites written and are doing their e-zine, their business increased often dramatically because they were out there and they were expressing themselves and they were saying how, you know, what they could offer, and all of a sudden stuff started to happen. So writing and information is key.
Absolutely.
So why is it difficult for people to write? Why does it take so long? Where do people get stuck? I know that's about three questions in one, but you know, I have some views on that, but I bet you even have more. So why do people have difficulty in writing?
Well, I think there's a long laundry list. You know, one of the first big reasons would be that few people have been taught to write. So I spoke about that a few moments ago. If you don't have the tools or the mechanisms to be able to produce the writing, then you're just kind of sitting there staring at your computer, not knowing what you're doing.
Well, don't people go through college and write papers all the time? Isn't that a big thing? I suppose they agonize about that as well, right?
Well, yeah. I have to say that I'm a living example of that. I mean, I did an honors degree, and I graduated with high marks, but I did not find writing easy. I didn't find it enjoyable, and it took me a very long time. So, you know, you can, under certain systems, produce a certain amount of copy, but that doesn't mean you make it, you do it easily, or you find it fun to do.
So that's not necessarily good training for writing for business, even though you've done a certain amount of it.
That's right. And in fact, writing for academic reasons is often a problem because the type of writing style that they're looking for in academia is really very different from the writing style that the typical average reader is looking for.
It often doesn't move that fast. It's
very, very dull.
It can be very, very dull.
Yeah.
It's got too many things trying to prove too many facts.
Exactly.
Over, you know, and
you know, it's got a lot of passive in it usually. It's just filled with problems. You know, and what's worse is that these things aren't seen as problems. So, you know, you might get excellent marks for writing in that way and have no idea that what you're producing is actually a failure in some senses.
Right.
I've heard someone say once, and I can't remember who it was, but I read in a book a woman describing this whole system of writing for university, saying that if you're writing something for someone who needs to be paid to read, then you've got a problem.
The longer the better for them, right?
Yeah.
You know, I've had PhDs and college professors that when it came to writing marketing copy, they were hopeless.
Yeah, I believe it.
They did, you know, it was as dull as dry toast. So anyway, let's get back to this other question. So what are some of the other reasons people have difficulty, other than being stuck in the academic or school model?
Well, I think another big problem is that people put too many expectations on themselves. Mm-hmm. So they either want to sell something, or they want to make certain acquaintanceships or meetings with people, or they just have so many expectations about what they're going to get out of this piece of writing that it kind of ties them up. They can't write because they're too concerned about the objectives they want to reach.
It's a bit like how people think of their marketing message, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
That is, when people say, what do you do? And you answer, you want to answer in such a way that gets their attention and interest.
Right.
But people have the expectation that people will kind of jump up and down and say, wow, that's fantastic, tell me more, which is a silly expectation.
Right.
You know, mild interest is fine. So you're saying the same thing for writing.
Oh, absolutely.
You can get some interest, you can start a communication, but not necessarily people are going to respond to your newsletter and articles and say, well, I have $500,000, can you come over?
That's right. And so what happens is that gets people tied up in knots. And they become so concerned about what it is they're trying to achieve that they turn a kind of a magnifying glass on themselves, and they become very, very concerned about what it is they want to do, and they can't come up with the right words.
Yeah, nothing is perfect. I tell people a perfect marketing communication gets 100% of the people that hear it to respond, and you know, you're doing great if you get 2 or 3%.
Yes.
And that's
exactly.
Even with good writing.
Exactly.
Because just not everyone is interested at that reason for a million reasons. So,
right.
So there is no such thing as perfect writing, and people try to be perfectionists, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? When we spoke at the beginning of this call, and I gave the image of a store in which you walk into and you do a quick evaluation of, and you commented, but you may not even be conscious of that.
Right.
The same thing happens with the writing. If people sit down to write, and at the back of their mind, there are all these thoughts of inadequacy, of not being able to do something, of not being able to accomplish something, but they're not conscious of that. It's just running along in the background. And they sit there and they think, I can't write. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but if they look at their feelings, they might notice they feel discouraged,
mm-hmm.
frustrated,
exactly.
confused.
Yeah.
They feel, it doesn't feel like a fun thing to do at all.
No.
So
no.
It's all caught up in this perfectionism and doing it right. And also, I think, afraid of being judged.
Yes.
It's like, that's a big, you know, a big thing in marketing. I'm going to be rejected. I'm going to be judged. So better than I not say anything, but obviously that doesn't work, so you're caught in this bind
mm-hmm.
where you know you have to communicate, but you don't know how to communicate.
Exactly.
So you're going to solve this for all of us in this call, right?
Absolutely.
So there's all these problems, issues, and concerns, and I think one thing that's useful for everyone to realize at this point is you're not alone. Almost everybody goes through this.
Oh, everybody does. And, you know, even very successful professional writers go through this.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, I mean, I'm very conscious of all the challenges that lie out there. I produce this newsletter once a week. I do lots of writing for clients. And every once in a while, I will still run right up against this brick wall that says, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. This is no good.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference that I have is that I now recognize that quickly, and I know how to deal with it.
And you realize that's not really true, you know?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, why hold on to it? It's not really true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. So let's get into, you know, where you start. What do you do? You have this thing that you do called mind mapping. Is that often where you start with a writing project?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, mind mapping is a very, very interesting technique, and I didn't discover this until after I had done most of my own research on writing. And when I heard about it, I thought, this just sounds too phony to be true. So I just kind of dismissed it.
Right.
And then I saw in this online forum I belong to, I saw more and more mentions of it, and I saw people talking about it, and I thought, you know, this is really crazy. I guess I better give it a try. And so I posted a note and said, you know, can someone tell me about mind map? Tell me some more about mind mapping. And a bunch of people wrote back and said, well, there's really not much to tell. And that kind of made my heart sink a little deeper, because I thought, you know, this sounds too easy, too simple. I don't see
sometimes how the best things are really simple.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So for anyone who hasn't heard about mind mapping, mind mapping was invented during either ancient Greek or ancient Roman times. And basically what it is you take a piece of paper, you turn it sideways, so it's sitting in front of you landscape fashion, and you take the subject you want to write about, and you write it in the middle of the page.
In a circle?
And you draw a circle around it.
Sure.
And then once you've done that...
So that's the title of your article in some cases.
It may be, but, you know, I wouldn't want people to feel that it has to be that way.
Okay.
You just pick something that is enough to get your brain going on this particular subject.
Okay.
And it may or may not be the title.
Okay.
Write it in the middle of the page, draw a circle around it, and then whatever else pops into your mind, you write on the page, elsewhere on the page. You draw a circle around it, and you draw a line to that central phrase. And, you know, if your next idea comes from a secondary circle, then you can draw a line to that and write another phrase and draw a circle around it. But I don't spend too much time fussing about which idea is the parent of which child, because I don't think that's so important. The idea is just you get whatever is in your head onto the paper.
Okay, so say if I'm thinking of writing an article about... web marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So in the middle, I'd write web marketing.
That's right.
Okay, so I'd say, okay, well, the first idea is, well, there's design. We have to have good design
right. For
the web
right.
price. And then we've got content, and I write another circle there.
Right.
And then I go, well, you know, how would you get found on the web?
Right.
So that's another one there, and so another is you know, I've got to build a list, because if I'm not sending anything to a list, so, you know, this is something obviously I know about. It's
mm-hmm.
not something you don't know about.
Right.
So I just say, okay. And so then from design, off of that, I can say, I can talk about sort of some of the rules of design.
Right.
And I can talk about colors.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I've got the middle topic, sort of four main things, and then all things start to pop up all over the place.
That's right.
So that's right. And so before long, I have sort of the main content of the article, but it's not really organized in any linear way at this point.
Well, that's right. And that's the purpose of mind mapping. It's
okay.
not meant to be organized.
Just get those ideas out of your head.
That's right. You know, I sometimes describe it as vomiting onto the page.
That's a good image. Blah, there it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I want to tell you a little story about it, because some months ago I was contacted by someone who works with copywriters generally. And he had heard me talk about mind mapping, and it happened to be on the same week that he was approached by a book publisher and invited to write a book, and he really desperately wanted to do it, but the deadline was very, very tight. I think it was about 6 months, which is a very short amount of time for a book, and he was trying to run his business during this time
sure.
frame as well. So he really didn't know if he could do it, but he heard my little blurb about mind mapping and thought, I'm going to give that a try. And he started his mind map, And it, because it was for a book, it was very big. I also sometimes recommend if people are doing mind maps for books, they get a piece of butcher paper, not just a 8.5 by 11, but a big piece of butcher paper, and pull it over the dining room table or a boardroom table or you know, someplace very big.
Right.
And he did this mind map, and all of a sudden, the word pancakes popped into his head.
Uh-huh.
And so he wrote down the word pancakes because I had emphasized how important it was not to let these words go away, even if they seemed irrelevant.
Uh-huh.
And anyways, within about 5 minutes, he had decided that pancakes were going to become a central metaphor for his book.
Uh-huh.
And and they did, and it worked well. He got the book done within the time frame. And he was just thrilled with how mind mapping worked for him.
So, yeah, it's a fast way because you don't have, when you're doing this, you don't have to worry about sentence structure.
That's right.
Or syntax or order or
exactly
anything. It's just bare naked ideas.
That's right.
Just thrown out on the paper.
Yeah.
Now, some people are a little more computer savvy.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good mind mapping software. One that I have, I don't use it a lot, but it's pretty good. It's called MindJet.
Mm-hmm.
MindJet. Mm-hmm. And there's another one called Inspiration.
Yes.
And it's similar. You write, do a circle, type into it, and then another circle, and automatically makes a line to it. And it's great for doing plans and other stuff, but we're really focusing on writing.
Yes. And the other thing I would say that people should be aware of is that all of the mind mapping software that's available on the Internet is downloadable for free for somewhere between a 12 and a 30-day trial.
Right.
And I strongly recommend to people that if they are interested in trying some mind mapping software, that they try it for free first and decide if they like it.
And you know, most of these aren't very expensive.
No.
I'm not sure what MindJet was. I think it was $49 or something. So.
Last time I checked, MindJet was in the $200 range.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Inspiration...
was less
last
expensive.
Time I checked, was kind of in the $60 or $80 range.
You know, there might be also junior versions and more advanced versions.
Yeah,
because I'm sure I didn't pay that amount. But
yes. But
anyway.
The other thing I'll say about mind mapping software is that don't rule out the possibility of not needing the software.
Yeah, obviously. Well, I just did this little thing on the paper in less than a minute.
Yeah.
And it's not that you have to keep this and archive it and come back to it. That is good for a long-term plan of some sort, but this is just an article. You can toss it out afterwards.
Well, yes, and the other thing I would say is that you may not need to finish, quote-unquote, the mind map.
Right.
Because one of the things that mind mapping does is it creates a framework for you to write. And I frequently find, particularly with anything I write that's less than 1,000 words, that I will start the mind map and finally go, oh, now I know how I want to tackle this article, and then just throw it away.
Yep.
And then I can write.
Yep. You don't have to have every single idea in the article.
No, it's just meant to inspire you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So anything else about mind mapping we should know?
No, I think that the other thing I would say is that as you write on your mind map, if you get stuck, don't hesitate to doodle or draw, because what you want to try and do is to keep your hand moving.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important part of this.
I say let the pen think.
Yes.
You know, if you just sort of move it, all of a sudden something comes out of the end of the pen. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a little more, you're tapping into your subconscious instead of saying, well, what's the perfect thing and where should I put the circle? That'll just stymie you.
Yes,
it doesn't have to be perfect. It's
scribbles.
It's notes.
Yes.
So I'd like to ask you something that's attached to this is, well, I want to write an article, but or write an e-zine on a regular basis or, you know, copy, whatever it is, or maybe even a book. But where do I start with ideas and topics in the first place? I hear this a lot, Daphne. I don't know what to write about. I don't know what my clients would be interested in. I don't know where to start with that. I mean, they don't realize the wealth of information and knowledge. Many of these people are consultants and coaches, and they're very, very knowledgeable, and that they get stuck with this. So how do you come up with topics and ideas to begin with?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question. And I think that the first thing that anyone who's developed enough of an expertise to be a business leader has to understand is that you know more than most people do.
In that area.
Yes, absolutely. And don't be afraid to acknowledge that to yourself.
People often think, well, gee, doesn't everybody know that?
No, they don't.
And then I say, well, why do you think they hire you? Because they don't know that. And so it's the same thing. They what you write about is the same thing on a different scale.
That's right.
But what you consult with or what expertise you offer.
That's right.
Okay, so to realize that you do know more than your clients,
mm-hmm.
that's one. What's next?
I guess the thing to do is to, when you're planning to write something, you really need to do an in-depth analysis about what it is you are trying to achieve. And providing enough information for a website might be one job. Providing enough information for an article that's, say, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 words might
okay.
be another.
But can we just come back to the... Well, so, you know, I have some ideas about this, too, but... For instance, you know, just coming up with topics. Mm-hmm. I've done this in workshops. People say, I have no ideas. And in 5 minutes, we come up with 20 ideas.
Right.
And the way I do it is, what are 5, 10, or 20 problems that your clients have?
Right.
And for me, that's just always the starting point. What don't they know that you've helped them with in the past? Oh, they don't know how to do this. They don't know how to do that. They don't know how to do that. They're not. And then those are your topics.
Right. Right.
So that's one place to start.
Yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty hard to beat problems because when people come forward with a problem, they want the answers.
Exactly.
If you're able to provide that, then you're providing something that, by definition, is very, very interesting.
And if you don't know the problems of your client, you know, are you really...
An expert in that.
Are subject? You really an expert?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, so if you can't come up with anything with that, you're kind of in trouble. So let's assume that you can.
Yeah.
So we've got some topics, we've got some ideas.
Yeah.
Why don't we do this, Daphne? You've written a book.
I have.
Called The 8.5 Steps, I like that, to Writing Faster and Better.
Right.
And so you have a number of chapters, and all the tips and ideas are in these chapters. So, shall we get into the first chapter and
sure.
kind of where we start and where we go?
Yes.
And the first chapter is about making a plan.
That's right.
So, is that sort of beyond the mind mapping, or does that include the mind mapping?
You can mind map at different phases of the process. The first thing I should say is that this book is really divided into... to three overall groups of steps.
Okay.
And I think that can be helpful for listeners to understand. And the first series of steps would be called planning steps.
Okay.
And then you've got writing.
Okay.
And then at the end, you've got copy editing, fixing up, etc. kinds of steps.
Okay.
So you've got preparation, writing, and fixing up.
Okay, great.
And those are the categories. So mind mapping can play in any number of the steps at the beginning.
Okay.
We call planning steps. Now, the first one is actually called make a plan. And that is where you really decide what it is that you're going to write about.
Okay.
And the very first thing you need to do is you need to ask yourself who your reader is. And people are often quite unclear about this point. And it can be very, very helpful to have a deep understanding of who your reader is. So that means gender. Is it mostly men, mostly women, or is it a combination? Their age profile, their education, the kinds of things they're interested in.
The kind of business they're in.
Anything you can do that helps you create a strong visual image of a reader, not a whole group of readers, but a reader, is going to be very helpful to you as a writer. because when you write to an individual, you tend to write in a more interesting, meaningful way.
More personable way.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult, particularly if you're, say, an engineer, to pick one individual reader. Because engineers in particular don't like to be pulled in that direction. They say, well, some people want this, some people need this, you know, different people want that. But if you can focus your attention into one individual, that's going to help your writing become more interesting and more meaningful.
But it can also be a composite person in a sense, right? Like I think of, I'm writing to an independent professional, they're self-employed, they're in an information-type business,
right.
That is, they're consulting or coaching or training or all that sort of amalgam of things. They usually have a home office. They access
right.
their computer from home.
Yeah.
They have a lot of things they're doing, and they don't have a lot of time. They're thinking of, how am I going to get my next clients,
mm-hmm.
and what do I do next? And then I think of, well, here's problems that people have asked me and that I've had myself, or a recent person that I've been working with in one of my groups and something that comes up. And I figure, well, they have that problem. This ideal client does, and kind of like that, right? That
can be very, very helpful. But, you know, Robert, I would actually encourage you to go to the next step,
great.
Which is take it to one individual person.
Okay, very good.
Because I think what that does is that makes the reader real to you.
Okay.
And that tends to make a big difference.
So put a face on them.
Imagine
a person, even a name.
Yes.
And, you know, I often talk about people who are struggling to market. So, you know, I can imagine a person who has that kind of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And that, mm-hmm. you know, you're struggling with this, and here's what I found. And okay, that's
right.
good. I like that.
That's right. And then once you have your reader in mind, the next thing you need to know is how many words you have. And this is a very important decision that you need to make. Sometimes the decision may be made for you, but if you are making the decision yourself, you need to be very, very clear about it. You know, is this 500 words? Is this, you know, 1,500 words? Is it 750? Where are you in the word spectrum? Because what that will do is that will have a profound impact on what you can write about. The example I give in my book, and I use this example all the time, is that if you want to write about the Second World War, you cannot actually write about that in 750 words.
You sure can't.
But you know what? You would not believe the number of people who try.
In other words, people take, I use this differentiation. I call it a core issue article, which is a broader, longer article about the essence of all the main things in your business.
Right.
We'll get into your concept about it. And then I think of an easing article, which is one small aspect.
Right.
And
right.
that you can do in 750 words.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And you know, the great thing, particularly for people who say, you know, say they want to produce an easing article once a week or even twice a week, what you can do is you can take a single idea and maybe spin half a dozen articles off of it.
Right. Like I did a series of 10 articles on persuasion.
Right.
10
right.
different aspects yes. of persuasion just
yeah.
recently.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Because just one article on persuasion in general is just, how can you really do it? There's
mm-hmm.
been books written about that.
Mm-hmm.
I could have written 20 of them.
Yes, yeah,
so.
Yeah. So, so that's a very, very valuable tool. I've helped more people with that one because they start to talk about what they want to write about, and then I point out to them that the idea is actually way too big for
yeah.
the space they have, and then we start talking about it, and they realize it's half a dozen articles.
Yeah, it's like, this looks like a book to me.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're just trying to say too much, and all of a sudden it's so long, it's 1,500, 2,000 words, and that for an email newsletter is just not going to work.
Exactly.
People aren't going to read that much.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Okay, good.
So once you've come to some sort of resolution about how many words you have, then the third and last thing you need to ask yourself is, what do you want your reader to do? And sometimes you might not have anything specific you want them to do, and that's okay, but you need to be conscious up front about what the action you want is. Sometimes you want them to buy something. Sometimes you just want them to understand something, but you need to know what it is you're asking of your reader.
You know, I sum it up in my newsletter at the bottom. It says the more clients, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, if you're going to do this and if this is very important to you, the first thing you need to do is start here and do this, something like that.
Right.
So people are clear about this is where to start with this and this is why it's so important,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And as you say, it might be a call to action for something. It might be even to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, just to kind of wrap up this first step in my writing process, what you need to do is you need to write these things down and stick it up on, you know, beside your computer, on your bulletin board, on some place that you will see as you are writing.
So okay.
That's really, really important because it's easy to forget this stuff.
Yeah, and especially if you're starting with this and you've really had a lot of problems with it,
mm-hmm.
you've got to keep reminding yourself.
Exactly.
Okay, great,
exactly.
Great.
So once you've done that, then you're ready to move on to step two, which is still part of the preparation step, and this is research.
Okay.
And
research. Everyone just loves research.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's there is a popular theory out there that too many people spend too much time on research and not enough time on writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you have actually gone through the planning step first, before you do the research, then you're in a better frame of mind to do the research, and you're not likely to lose as much time.
Because you've got a focus, a direction,
that's right.
The number of words, you know what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, how do I find a little bit more information on that? And you're focused.
That's right.
Okay, so how do you research? And do you always have to research?
You know, I don't always have to research because I'm writing about writing. And so I get some writing magazines. Sometimes I get some ideas from there. You know, I do scan through the library regularly, and if there's a book I haven't read before, I'm actually reading about fiction writing right now, because I seem to have read my way through most of the nonfiction writing books. So that's mainly how I do research. The other thing that may be most useful for people who are running a different kind of business is to interview their clients, and that can be extremely useful for producing articles or materials for websites.
Or even do surveys of clients.
Yes.
What are the biggest concerns that you have that are
mm-hmm.
stopping you in this area?
Mm-hmm.
And that will generate topics for you.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And so just a couple of points I'll offer about interviewing, because people often are not trained to interview
mm-hmm.
and don't regularly get practice at it. And there are a couple of key points to interviewing that are just so important. And I do workshops on interviewing, and my favorite technique to do is to call two people up from the room. These are in-person workshops. So I'll call two people up from the room and have one interview the other. And it's always fascinating to me to see the number of people who almost more or less directly go into questions like, what was the most interesting, exciting, frustrating, whatever, that you experienced?
Uh-huh.
And that's when I call a halt to things, because that kind of question is actually really dangerous with interviewing. What it does is it puts a lot of pressure on the person being interviewed to come up with a single answer.
Right.
And when people are being interviewed, they need to accept that whatever they say is going to be all right. And if they're asked a question that is structured in such a way that says, what is the most, et cetera, et cetera, then they start to panic a bit. And it often serves to shut down the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So what I suggest to people is that they take those kinds of questions and they carefully recraft them so that they just ask something like, you know, what is one of the ways in which XYZ happened?
Right.
So that the person being interviewed has that pressure pulled off them. So that's one of the things to keep in mind when you're doing the interviewing. The other is to be sure to ask lots of open-ended questions. And those are questions that are not answered with a yes or a no.
Right.
And that's also another deadly little path to go down. Because then the person's just answering yes or no, and you're not hearing things in their own unique, interesting way.
Right.
And the other thing to do while you're interviewing is to be sure to give the person lots of feedback. So you say things like, wow, that must have been interesting. That must have been frustrating. You know, you're constantly feeding back information.
And that's going to pull more information out of them, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Because what often happens is that we're not, by and large, excellent communicators. And if we ask someone something, they will answer based on their own kind of idiosyncratic way of talking.
Right.
And we may misunderstand them. And so what I suggest to people is that they give their interview subjects feedback, they paraphrase back to them what they said, and then if you have misunderstood the interview subject, then they're going to dive right in there and correct you, and you will have a much better, more interesting, more meaningful quote.
Very good. So in what kind of cases would you use interviewing as a research tool? It's kind of hard to imagine doing that for your weekly e-zine article, but I could see it for a book and some other things.
You know, it really depends on the nature of your e-zine.
Mm-hmm.
My particular structure doesn't really lend itself to interviewing other people very easily, although every once in a rare while I do. But websites can be a great place for interviews. My book has some interviews at the back. There are lots of ways in which interviews can be useful. So, and interviewing is a lot more fun, and it's a lot faster than reading a book or reading a journal.
So the interview itself, edited down in some cases, can actually be the article, is what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We just had. I had someone interview a number of my past clients for case studies,
mm-hmm.
and so I didn't do the interviewing, but it really made it interesting because, you know, how did your business grow and how did you use Robert's materials and et cetera, et cetera. And they read very, very quickly and really give a good idea of how my materials help them. So
right.
Yeah, it was definitely easier than just writing it from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I just have to throw this in. I use Google a lot for research.
Right.
I'm sure everybody does. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I come up with a word, and then I'll look it up in the dictionary, I'll look it up in a Google, and that creates associations for other things.
Right, right.
So I'm sure people do that kind of thing.
Yes, yes. And that can be the point at which you do another mind map.
Sure.
You know, and who knows where that could take you.
Sure.
So, but once you've done your research, you know, the amount of time you need to spend on your research will really vary with not just the length of the article, but your own background, your own training, and the purpose of what you're trying to do. So there's no... I can't say typically your research should take 10% of your time.
Sure.
You know, it will vary. It will vary greatly. So